This is John Rappaport, and this is a free podcast. I'm talking to you. The premise here is everybody needs to wake up more. I don't care who you are, I'm including myself, everybody. There are stages of waking up. It isn't just you're awake or you're asleep. That's the propaganda. That's the PR. That's what a lot of people seem to believe. Oh, well, I woke up. I was asleep. Now I'm awake. No, that's not it. And I can attest to that from 20 years of writing online, of progressively waking up myself. And so the theory here, which is borne out over time, is if a writer wakes himself up, he wakes up other people. That's just the way it is. And if he doesn't, he doesn't. That's the way that is. And what do I mean by waking up? I mean, we're swimming and living in this vast culture which has become a monster. It's layer upon layer upon layer of false perception, thought, and language that has been imposed from the outside and from within ourselves, along all kinds of vectors and lines over time. We are not aware of all of it happening. None of us is, no matter what you say. Oh, I'm a person who knows everything there is to know that's worth knowing. No, you're not. No, I'm not. None of us is. Let's get that straight, okay? Let's really get that straight. Because there are far too many people out there who think that they know everything worth knowing. I don't know why they continue to go online in that, based on that, but they do. Just to get confirmation to themselves, I know everything worth knowing. No, not true. Never has been. Never will be. And because we're surrounded by this vast liquid goo of amoeba-like culture that has been accumulating layers and strata for such a very, very long time and changing the very nature of language, corporate speak, political speak, now we have techno speak, which is horrific, and other kinds of speak, religious speak, teacher speak. It infiltrates thoughts, perceptions, minds, and it begins to form a wider, deeper, higher culture. Culture is everything because culture changes perception, changes thought, changes action, changes the level of available energy that a person has. That's key. That is key. So I want to talk about pieces of my history online for these last 20 years, starting with No More Fake News, actually. I think it's 21 years or 20 years, two years at this point, started in the year 2000 online. Been writing articles, for the most part, every day for all this time. Okay. And I've discovered in the process that, yes, some of my articles have been republished and reposted widely, but many of them haven't, even on alternative websites. And over time, I become aware of certain levels of censorship, of course, in the mainstream, but also on alternative sites of my work. And over time, it's been increasingly clear to me why that's been happening. At first, it had to do with content. Because in 1988, I published a book called AIDS, Inc., in which I said AIDS was definitely not the cause, HIV was definitely not the cause of AIDS. But more than that, I said AIDS was non-existent. It was an umbrella term which was used to cover the fact that in many different groups of people, different factors, none of them having to do with a virus called HIV, were causing the destruction of health, or as medical people would say, the destruction of the immune system. And that there was a fixation on the part of people to look for the one cause, the one thing, the one explanation. If it wasn't going to be HIV, then it had to be something else that would explain the it called AIDS. And I pointed out in great detail with much evidence in that book and in articles and talks that I gave and interviews on the radio and so forth, that this was false. The one thing, the one cause, that whole paradigm was completely false. Well, that was too hot to handle for a whole lot of people, including in the alternative press, and has remained too hot to handle to this day. So at first, it was the content of what I was writing about that caused this level of censorship of my work where that occurred. And I could give other examples. For example, when I started publishing a commentary and interview on the subject of Dr. Barbara Starfield's groundbreaking review, July 26, 2000, Journal of the American Medical Association, in which she said basically the U.S. medical system was killing 225,000 people a year, which would mean 2.25 million people a year. And she told me in an interview that that was a conservative estimate. And this was decidedly mainstream. She being a revered public health expert at Johns Hopkins, Journal of the American Medical Association published her review, et cetera, et cetera. So this was a wallop and a heavy blow to the kidneys and the liver of the American Medical Association. And the fact that I kept playing this up and actually interviewed Starfield and kept reprinting my pieces about this review of hers and found other citations and other reviews and studies that confirmed what she was saying, that also made me extremely unpopular in some corners of the alternative press. Too hot to handle. Didn't want to get into that. I've covered that in a previous podcast. Content that I was putting forward that was, oh, that's too much. We don't want to get into that. Why? Because a lot of people in the alternative press want to have it both ways. They want to hang on to certain aspects of Rockefeller germ theory, 100 years of modern medicine, medical drugs, vaccines, while criticizing other areas. They don't want to bury the whole theory. They're afraid of doing that. They're afraid it'll take them out too far and they'll lose audience. I've never been afraid of that. I haven't been happy about it sometimes when I saw it occurring, but that's way different than being afraid of it. Because, as I've said a number of times before, when I went into journalism in 1982, I did so with the prospect of digging deep and going down many rabbit holes and punishing. Yeah. Punishing the people who were sitting at the bottom of these rabbit holes, the gatekeepers, the real gatekeepers, the real liars and medical murderers and so forth at the deepest and highest levels. I reveled in that. That's what I wanted to do. That's where the juice came from for me. That's why I was excited to do journalism. That's why I didn't stop. That's why I kept going. If that hadn't been my motive, if I didn't get excited and energetic about that, I would have stopped a long time ago. So there was no question about, well, am I going to calculate how much audience I'm losing if I keep doing? No, it was never in the cards for me. It's in the cards for a whole lot of other people to speak frankly. So that's another reason that content of mine was censored in the alternative press. Now, recently when I came to Substack, actually before then, but it's accelerated since I started writing on Substack, something else began to happen with my work, which was in the writing itself. The writing itself at times became satire. It became crucial satire, if I may say so, and I do. Because that's where I ended up after enough criticism and relentless attack on the culture, which I include medical in and political in and education and organized religion and every other aspect you can think of that we're drowning in this insane multi-level culture. It did go to vicious satire for me. And part of the reason was because that was in me to do. And I hadn't seen it clearly as a fact for many years of writing and publishing and reporting. I hadn't really seen that reservoir of energy that was all about writing satire, turning reality on its head, no holds barred. And when I got to Substack, bang, 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 that came to full flower immediately. And I can't tell you how many articles I wrote for Substack that I haven't yet published, because it was just boom, 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 boom. One article gave rise to another, and the lineup and the queue got longer and longer and longer and longer. It was an explosion of energy as a writer, not just a reporter anymore, but as a writer. Because that's what I've always been. And yes, at first, when I started journalism, I fell into a kind of a journalistic style, which I found very easy to do for some reason. Part of it was that when I read journalism, I could hear it. I could hear the tone. I could hear the rhythms. I could hear the shifts of emphasis from one point to another. I could grasp the whole gestalt of the way journalism is laid down. So it was very easy for me to just move into that template and that pattern and do journalism, but with vastly different content right from the beginning in 1982, when I started writing for LA Weekly, 18 years before I went online in 2000. But then, in bursts, in starts and stops, and then finally in an explosion of fireworks when I got onto Substack, that whole reservoir of energy that was there, that I didn't know was there to that extent and power and degree, blossomed, spilled over, bang, 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 bang. So it was in the writing that led to the censorship. Well, these alternative outlets, well, he's writing this satire. He's constructing interviews with major leaders and major medical people and all sorts of wild situations. Anthony Fauci in hell talking to Satan, and the Pope in hell talking to Satan. And, you know, we don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. Why not? Why don't they want to touch it, even on alternative outlets with a 10-foot pole? Because for them, with a conventional mindset about journalism, and I have to say it because it's true, and a very limited understanding of the territory, the vast territory of writing itself, a vastly limited conception of what that is and can be, well, naturally, they would want to censor that material of mine. Oh, we don't want to get into that. It's too much. Why is it too much? Again, because they're afraid of losing audience. Because they themselves don't understand that kind of writing, where it comes from, what it really is, how deep it bites. And I've seen this, okay, happening, and I've said, okay, maybe I'm going to lose some audience here. Not happy about that, but so be it. Because that's the way it is. That's what I'm doing. That's what sustains me. And more than sustains me. If I get up every morning knowing that there is that possibility that I'm going to find yet a new highway to drive down in my super duper Lamborghini of satire, and it's going to make impact, I'm launched for the day. I am launched for the day. At 84 years old, I don't give a shit. I'm there, baby. And you see, here's the next thing that I wanted to talk to you about. And I'm talking straight to you, whoever you are listening. There are layers and layers of reality. And there are layers and layers to writing. And yeah, I've been working as a reporter for a long time, but I've also been working as a writer. And they're not the same thing. They're not identical. You can't just switch one out for the other. It's never been the case that you could switch one out for the other. And wherever you find a journalist who's also a writer, you'll see that. They're not identical. And they're not identical only for the reader, but also for the writer, for the man or the woman who's doing the writing. So what does that say about me? Because that's who I'm talking about right here. It says something about what I believe, and that is that every writer is unique. Every individual writer is unique. But in order for that uniqueness to surface and show itself and be expressed on the page by the writer, he's got to be hell-bent for leather and not take any prisoners. And he's got to be willing to go all out in expressing what he wants to express, regardless of what's going to happen to, quote, the audience. That's what goes on when you're talking about a writer who is unique, which every writer potentially is, but not every writer realizes that potentiality for various reasons that are fairly obvious. So without bragging or boasting or trumpeting, I'm just telling you that I am realizing that potential in me, for better or worse, in anybody else's judgment. You know, they can make whatever judgments they want. All I know is, and the proof is in the pudding of my everyday life and experience as a writer, that giving expression to more and more of that potential as a writer in me is, for me, a fantastic thing. And it gives you, the reader, something that you're not going to be able to find anywhere else. Nowhere else. If you look at the body of my work for the last 20 years, you're not going to be able to find anything that looks like that anywhere else. If you survey the whole thing, you're just not. It's not going to be anywhere else. Nor should it be. Now, again, people can make any judgment about that 20 years of work in any way they want to. this, they can say this, they can say that, they can say whatever they want to. But I'm just saying that when a writer, in this case me, gives rise to the expression of all the potential that he can find within himself, what comes out is going to be unique, not just in content, but also in the way it's expressed. And because I know that writing is something in and of itself, apart from the content, apart from mere transmission of the data, give me the data, I want the data set, let me see the data, that's the culture, that's the modern culture. That has deteriorating writing to a wretched, wretched state. And I know that as a writer, having read much of that. I know how to present data. I've presented miles of data as a reporter for the last 20 years. But I've also taken care not to make it boring and to twist the screw on what it means, what the data mean, what the content means. So, yes, if you read my work, you're going to get a picture of a unique writer. And some people balk at that. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what he's saying. It's a bit confusing, and I haven't seen anything else like this. And what am I supposed to do with it? And what you're supposed to do is recognize that this is what happens when you have an individual who doesn't give in, who doesn't go along with the prevailing style or the prevailing fashion or the prevailing content or the prevailing kind of writing. This is what happens, in other words, when an individual is being an individual. That's what happens. And if there were more writers around who did that to the fullest extent to which they're capable over a long period of time, more and more people would understand that fact. And more people would be waking up to new levels of understanding, perception, thought, as a result of reading all of this unique writing from unique writers who are expressing fuller and fuller degrees of their potential. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm doing. And that's what I want more writers to be and do. That's my story if I had to boil it down. So this is why I want to talk to you. Because I'm going up against the perception, thought, acceptable content, shape of the culture. I'm going up against all of those layers of shit and crap and sleep-inducing hypnosis in terms not just of content, but of language, of expression, of the transmission of the data, of the techno-speak in which we are drowning. I'm going up against all of that. It's not real. It's imposed. It's habitual. It's repetitive. It's a fashion statement. And so I expect there to be a certain level of questioning and confusion among my readers as more and more layers of my personal reality and potential as a unique writer surface and are expressed. Why wouldn't? Sure, of course. Well, I'm not sure. This is new. Rappaport's doing something he wasn't doing before. Wow. And he's not just doing it a little bit. He's doing it a lot. And he's doing it no holds barred. And he's relentless about it. Yeah, okay. Okay, now how do I want to look at this? Am I going to put this through the filter of a lens of modern culture and make a judgment based on that? Or is it possible for me to just really understand or try to recognize this is a unique writer? That's what this is. And we don't have enough of them. So when you are faced with a unique writer who is giving vent to all those levels of potential. You're going to encounter stuff you didn't encounter before because the culture is the conformity. The culture is the uniformity. The culture is what we expect, both in terms of content, style, and so forth. That's what the culture gives us, and that's what we're led to expect, and therefore we limit ourselves in our ability to comprehend something that would be entirely different, which is what I'm doing. Okay? That's what I'm telling you. That's what I want to indicate. Now, sure, content, like I said at the beginning, has set me apart. I say, well, the virus doesn't exist, SARS-CoV-2, and other viruses don't exist. And as far as I can see, none of them exist. And here's why. Evidence, 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 evidence. Fake claim on their part, the virologist's part, etc. Sure, that's going to, you know, rattle a lot of people, of course, the content. But don't assume that that's the real reason or the only reason for the censorship that my work has encountered. It's, as I've just explained, way, way more than that. It's people who are still steeped in the culture, who are publishers and editors and writers and who control websites and so forth, who just can't see their way clear yet to seeing what a unique writer would be and do. And latching on to that and saying, well, this guy is completely different. And it's, you know, yeah, let's give him some space here, a lot of space. We need more of these writers because the waking up is more than just superficial. The waking up that we need is more than just, oh, okay, so politics is lying, the politicians are lying, the media are lying. We've got globalists that are trying to create one world government. We know that to be true. COVID is murder, the vaccine. Yeah, all of that is vastly important. But if you just keep repeating that over and over again, there comes a point where you paralyze people, where the repetitive nature of what you're saying and the way that you're saying it become soporific to people, and they fall asleep and they don't do anything. And it's just, we already got that message and now you're giving it to us again. No, that's not what I'm trying to do at all. And you can see that. That's what I'm trying to get through here. There's not enough individuals who are relentlessly standing on their own individuality, on their own terms, both in terms of content and the way they're expressing themselves as writers, to let people know that this reality exists. So they say, well, this guy is very different. Yeah, I mean, I have to admit that he's very different. And I'm not sure that I'm grasping. And yeah, people are not sure that they're grasping because, as I say, they're trying to compare what I'm doing to something conventional that they already understand, either in content or in mode or way that I'm writing. And if you do that, then and you're going to say, well, I'm not sure I understand this. Of course. Got to get past that. We have to get past that. Because in order to slay this monster of a culture in which we've been embedded, I mean, for a very, very long time, and it's just gotten worse and worse and worse, in order to slay that monster, the waking up in stages that we have to do carries us way beyond just conventional expression. And most people are just not ready for a unique individual or a unique writer. And they have to come to grips with that. And they will over time. And they are over time. I haven't, you know, gotten to the point yet where I'm just writing for myself and nobody's paying attention. more people are paying attention. And that's not because I've been making all kinds of compromises, just the opposite. I'm going the other way completely. Yeah. It's big what I'm talking about here. It's big. Very big. What is satire anyway? Satire is turning reality on its head. Instead of, for example, just simply attacking someone as an idiot, I present him in full flower as if he were given a dose of truth serum, okay? And then he confesses to his own idiocy in some way or another. That would be one type of satire. You turn reality on its head. That has to happen. Every satirist writing since the beginning of time, making a mockery of current reality, has known this. And don't imagine that a satirist has gotten to writing really crucial and knife-like, sword-like satire overnight. Don't think that's the case. It's not. Someone who writes real satire, not just lame jokes for roofs and yokels, comes to that knife edge over time. The volcano percolates within him over time, and it grows in intensity, and finally it spills out the top. Because it has to, because he wants it to, because he needs it to, because he's seeing how insane the reality of the culture actually is, which is not, again, black or white, yes or no, I realize it or I don't realize it. It's not that. It's levels of insight and comprehension. And yes, frustration and all of that too. So satire is when a writer reaches the point where he says, the whole show that we're watching here, it's the whole show. It's not just this piece of content and that lie and this crime and those conspirators and those elites. It's more than that. It's the whole show. It's the whole parade. It's the whole stage play. It's the whole language that's being destroyed and distorted and contorted. It's the whole show. And therefore, that's what I want to take on. The insanity of the whole show. Yeah. So the readers who happen to be just and only focused on the pieces of content are not going to get it. They're not going to get it right away. It's going to take time for it to sink in, this satire, until they realize that in the writing itself, there is the overturning of the whole show, the whole reality. And then they realize that to some degree, maybe to a great degree, they've been participating in the whole show too. We all have. I'm not accepting myself. Over time, I become more aware. That's one of the benefits of being a writer and not stopping and being relentless, that over time you become more aware. You say to yourself, yes, I'm exposing more and more crimes, but there's something in the way that I'm doing it that's becoming repetitive, and I have to get away from that. I have to overcome it. I have to destroy it too. Writing is both destruction and creating. It's both. So is art. And frankly, too many people are afraid of the destroying part of it. That's why we have fewer real artists than we have, because an artist becomes aware sooner or later that destruction is part of what he's doing. Now, if you back away from that, oh, I don't know, I need more cream puffs and marshmallows and rainbows, etc., etc., you're going to be fucked up. You really are. You're going to find yourself in a padded cell of cotton candy without knowing how to get out. You don't want that. This is what I'm doing on Substack. So it's a subscription service. People can read it for free. There are certain articles and podcasts that you need to subscribe in order to get. That's the setup. That's the layout. That's the way that writers make money and make a living. It's called making a living. People do lots of different things to make a living. I make a living as a writer. I make no apologies for it. That's what I do. That's what I've been doing for a long time. Now, my strategy has been, if I'm just looking at the making a living part for a moment, if you'll excuse me for doing that. Oh, some people say all information should be free. No, it shouldn't. That's like me coming into your place of business and saying, whatever you're doing there in your job should be for free because you think it's important, right? In some way or another, well, what's important should be free. You say, are you crazy? You want me to go broke? Well, I'm saying the same thing to people who occasionally pop up. Well, everything or all information should be free. No, it shouldn't. Absolutely not. Now, my strategy, as a strategy, if you want to look at it that way, which is not the basic way I'm looking at it, I'm looking at it like I write every day. But I've given away millions, I guess by now, of words. I mean, thousands and thousands of articles for free, interviews for free, talks, lectures, speeches for free. Et cetera, over the years, many, 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 many years. And then I've also said to people, I have other material of mine. You pay for this if you want it. Nobody's forcing you to, but if you want it, I think it's extraordinary value for your money, and here it is. Well, that's the subscription model of Substack. So I ask people, subscribe, come on, chip in a few bucks. It's $60 a year if you pay all at once. That's $6 a month for 10 months, and you get 2 months free. $6 a month, as I've written several times, that's about the price of a breakfast at an old diner somewhere in 1990, one breakfast a month. If you think about it for a second. And aside from what we're offering now to yearly subscribers and monthly subscribers, we're going to create something new coming up soon that will be more, and excitingly more, for those who subscribe for a year, all at once. Book excerpts, vital book excerpts from books that I, or at least one book that I've written, maybe more. I'm hoping to assemble, and I'm still looking for them, radio programs that I've done in the past, which cannot be duplicated. They were crucial at the time that I did them, and I'm still reaching out to get the tapes of those. Hopefully we'll have them soon. More podcasts than the ones that I'm already doing. More articles than I'm already posting. And other things that I'm contemplating. So in other words, from a purely activity point of view, the business of writing, making a living writing, my intent is to offer so much great stuff that more of you will subscribe for a year all at once. Why not? To give you more, perhaps, than anybody else on Substack is giving you. So think about that. I'm going the distance on this for subscribers and breaking through previous limits on what I can offer. So there's my shameless self-plug. But do I wake up in the morning and am I primarily motivated during the course of the day by the making a living part of writing or by the writing of writing? It's by the writing of writing. I don't think that I could stop writing even if I were not making a nickel off of it ever again. I mean, I'd have to put myself to the test, but that's the way I see it. I've made a leap and a commitment. It's in alignment with my desire to be an artist. And also to be a journalist. And here's where I am now. No More Fake News blog, Outside the Reality Machine blog, and Substack page. Three blogs operating. Boom, 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 boom. So let me say something now about art, imagination, and creativity, which I've talked about many times before and written about many, many times before, because that's another aspect of what motivates me as a writer. Because it saved my skin many times, personally, to know, and I've painted on and off for many, many years, as well as written. When the chips were down and I saw I was in some kind of a holding pattern or I couldn't think of where to go, what to do next, you know, not a good situation. It was always the creative that bailed me out. Well, you're in the situation you're in, John, because you're not imagining anything else, so that's what you need to do now. You need to imagine something else than what you're doing now, and then things are going to change. And I've confirmed that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of times over and over again. That's the truth. That's the way it works, and it works for me as a writer. And that's also part of the reason why I turned to satire, because it was imagination. It was because, well, I can take these real-life characters, these insane people that populate the culture and seem to be influencing it and actually disseminating it and owning it. And I can use them as characters in my stage plays of satire. Well, that's all imagination. And that makes me freer, freer and freer and freer and freer. I write about that. I've written about that extensively at No More Fake News for years, and particularly Outside the Reality Machine. The title of that blog should tell you something. Outside the Reality Machine. Reality is like a machine. And I've made the metaphor many times of the reality manufacturing company, a company that manufactures reality for people and says, this is it. Look at this. Deal with this, think about this and this only. This is reality. No, it isn't. It's temporary. It's temporary. Its permanence, or the sense of its permanence, depends purely on people not being able or willing to access their own imagination. And if they could, and if they would, they would see that it's temporary. I want them to see it. I want me to see it more and more and more and more. And that's part of the reason that I keep writing about it, so that I see more and more of that as the truth. And this is the case for every writer. And you got to understand this. Part of the reason that every writer is writing what he's writing, if he's really the kind of writer that I've been talking about, is that he is proving to himself that what he sees and understands and comprehends is real, as opposed to what he's been told is real. He's talking to himself as well as talking to his audience. He's talking to the sky and the air and the ocean and the stars and hot dogs and burgers and picnics and football games and everything around, and saying, yeah, 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 I see you, I see you, I see you, I see you. And there's way more than that. And here's an example. And there's where the rubber doesn't meet the road for a whole lot of people who would say, well, I don't even know what imagination is, so how could I possibly get with this idea? I mean, come on, whatever, whatever, whatever. As if imagination is some kind of a quirk or part of a person's DNA, if he's lucky, and it's all a matter of chance and roll the dice. Bullshit. No, it isn't. It's available to anybody, everybody. And I'm also exemplifying that in my work, because that's part of what I'm doing and part of what I see. That imagination does, in fact, create reality. So I'm expressing that. Well, that's different. We're reading this guy. What's he talking about? Imagination is expressing reality. Well, I've heard that before, but he seems to be pressing hard on that, and actually then he's doing it at Well, that's what you would expect from some unique writers who are realizing their own energy and potential and not kowtowing to the crowd in either content or way of expressing themselves. I really hope that I'm getting this across to you. That this is what I'm about and this is what I'm doing. And I'm not making any bones about it. I'm not trying to look like other writers so that I can slip some important content through to you. I'm not trying to come across like other writers are coming across so that I can make certain points. I'm not trying to gauge audience response as the first thing that I think is important, or the middle thing, or the last thing, like other writers are doing. I am proposing a superculture, okay? A super duper culture, or a deep, deeper, deepest culture, or a wide, wider, widest culture, in which we have lots and lots and lots of these individual writers and unique individual artists, each of whom is really doing it relentlessly to overturn this monster of a culture. Upside down all the way. I happen to be one of those people. I am now not out there trying to find other people like that. I am just telling you that this is what I want to see or want there to be. I'm doing my work. I don't expect you to be instantly comfortable with my work. I don't expect you to be instantly accepting and comprehending of all the work. I don't expect to appear to you to be harmonious with the conventional view of what a writer is supposed to be. Your reality is supposed to be. I'm not looking for any of that. I'm not expecting any of that. I'm not anticipating any of that. I'm going for something completely different. As any individual who's actually an individual is. And if this experiment called a republic, a constitutional republic, and all of the history and struggle and warfare and blood that led to this individual freedom is what I'm talking about, means something, it means that individuals will take hold of their freedom and do something major, major, major with that freedom. Something that is different, because every individual is different. And those gaps between individuals can be bridged and will be bridged if you have the patience and the time to dig into what a unique individual is doing. That's what I'm about. Much more I could say about this, but I'm going to leave it there for now. If you're beginning to get an inkling where there was no inkling before, or if the inkling you're now getting is more than the inkling you had before you started listening to this, you might listen to it again. And you also might subscribe and support my work. This is John Rappaport. Thank you very much.